Welcome to your Found Family podcast, where we don't just have a heart-to-heart, we connect soul to soul. I'm your host, Lizzie, a certified coaching practitioner who found family outside of blood family. In our Found Family, you are accepted and assured that you are not alone. Subscribe and tune in for educational and empowering soul chats with women from all over the world, talking about well-being, personal growth and development, and mental and emotional health. Hi fam, I hope you're having a great day today. I am starting another segment in parallel to the Notes to Self. Think about that song, "It's My Party and I Can Cry If I Want To." Well, I was thinking about that as I was hitting record, that it's my podcast and I can have two segments if I want to. So here we are recording an episode all about OCD. Because I'm actually reading a book right now that is called Brain Lock, Free Yourself from Obsessive Compulsive Behavior by Jeffrey M. Schwartz and MD, excuse me, Jeffrey, with Beverly Bayet. Sorry if I am totally butchering that. This is basically a book with four-step self-treatment method to change your brain chemistry. And TBH, I was reading it on the subway. I'm doing a little mini like book club with some friends that I met on Twitter. So after this episode, if you are intrigued by this book or you think that it might help you, feel free to send me a message at Found Family Pod on Twitter. And just let me know and I can send you the link to join us and send you the link to go and buy the book on Amazon. And you can join us to learn more about OCD and ways to both cope and recover from it. So yeah, I'm sitting on the subway. We're going to be talking about chapters 1 and 2 this week. And I was actually kind of triggered by one of the things that was mentioned in this book. Now, for those of you who might not know, I have suffered from OCD since elementary school, and it has taken on many different forms, and the two that were really the most intrusive and debilitating when I was growing up were emetophobia, which is the fear of throwing up, and scrupulosity, which is a religious subset of OCD. And to, you know, help paint a picture. It was just absolute torture and hell in my mind at all times. I felt that God was going to smite me if I didn't pray enough or didn't pray the right way. And with the emetophobia, just being completely terrified of throwing up, I developed an eating disorder because in my mind, food equals throwing up. And I figured that the best way that I could control the outcome and really just like make sure that I was not going to throw up was if I just didn't eat. So I was very, very skinny, malnourished, suffering with all of these intrusive thoughts about, you know, like religious blasphemy. And, you know, every time that I thought something, I would freak out and think that I was going to hell or that God was going to not protect me. And it just spiraled. So what I think and hope is going to be helpful is just kind of walking through the different chapters of this book, kind of like a version of a book club, but through my podcast. So all of the references that I'll be using are directly from the book. Again, it's called Brain Lock. I'm going to have the link in the description and make sure that you guys have that available so that you can, again, just learn more for yourself. So a little bit more information about OCD. First of all, OCD is a biochemical imbalance in the brain. Now, a lot of people, especially, you know, with OCD specifically, there's such a stigma around OCD. And when people don't really take either the time or the attention to spell it out, like obsessive compulsive disorder, there is this stigma that for people who are OCD, they're really clean or they like to have things tidy. And it's like, oh my God, if you only knew the torture that comes with living with OCD. It goes way beyond that. People who suffer from OCD don't typically want to be so you know, quote unquote, neat freak. Like, they don't want to be acting out in this way. It is literally the only way that they can cope with their anxiety when it comes to that, you know, subset of OCD. It comes in so many different forms, but I'm just using that one as an example because, again, I think that there's like this huge stigma around it. So again, if you break down OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder, obsessions are intrusive, unwelcomed thoughts or images which create anxiety. And the compulsions are the behaviors people perform in an attempt to rid themselves of the fear and anxiety that's caused by their obsession. So think about right now in your mind the image of like the recycling arrows, that one arrow is pointing to the next, is pointing to the next. Like, it is just a total mindfuck, and it seems like this never-ending infinity loop of just one thing to the next. So a sufferer will have an intrusive, unwelcome thought that they literally are unable to control. And then the immediate question is, why am I thinking this? Is there something wrong with me? I'm not this person. I can't believe I had this thought. Does anyone else think this? And that uncertainty and lack of trust in themselves gives them this absolutely crippling fear and anxiety. And then in an effort to get rid of it, or to at least calm it down, the compulsions start as a way to just cope with all of that. So basically what's said in the book, which is so true, it's worrying about worrying. How wild is that? When I started learning more about OCD and I realized all of that, first of all, I had no idea that I had obsessive compulsive disorder. I recognized that a lot of my intrusive thoughts were strange, absurd, etc. And I recognized that some of the symptoms, the compulsions that I was doing, you know, people around me were not doing them, but I truly had no control. And this is where people in the mental health community can say, like, to tell someone to just get over it or move on with it, but they're not taught how to. And I talked about this in my last episode from last week. It's not fair to tell someone that without giving them the proper resources and knowledge and teaching them how to overcome these things. So being anxious about things that you realize aren't, you know, even worth worrying about is a cycle. And so what the book talks about too is that the brain of someone who suffers from OCD flares up with overactivity, and that is what sends the intrusive thoughts. The back of the cover literally shows the brain of someone who does not have OCD and the brain of someone who does, and the whole front part, like the forehead part of the brain, is literally orange and yellow and red, and that's what they're talking about, this flare of overactivity. So there's a lot of need for approval, a lot of need for validation. And I love this too. It talks about mindfulness and how just being present, just being in the present moment isn't true mindfulness. And again, this was a new thing for me too, a revelation about mindfulness, because again, it's used a lot in the media and in society. And sometimes when things are overused, and maybe by people who might not know either the science behind something or the facts, it can become a stigma. So mindfulness is an action, not just a state of mind or a way of being. So as the book says, quote, "You're not simply observing your thoughts. You are evaluating your choices and actions, letting thoughts in with an open mind, assessing them, and then deciding what to do about them." Now, without even having read this book, I was able to work on behavioral therapy and overcome and recover emetophobia and scrupulosity. And it's because in those moments of mindfulness, that I was not just observing my thoughts. I was literally making a conscious effort to evaluate the choices and actions that I was doing and making, letting the thoughts in with an open mind, trying to figure out like why the fuck I was even thinking them, and then deciding what to do about them. So my mind was constantly asking a different set of questions because I felt many, many times during very, very intense moments of obsessions and compulsions that I was not going to live on this planet another day if I wasn't able to manage these thoughts. It's extremely exhausting, mentally, physically, spiritually, everything, to be in this constant, I mean, imagine like a record in your brain just on repeat, over and over and over again, worrying about the same thing over and over and over again, the same question. It doesn't go away. And that is extremely exhausting. It's like thinking about going to the gym and thinking 15 steps ahead and exhausting yourself mentally because of what you think is going to be this like huge hurdle to even get there. And you literally exhaust yourself mentally before you even go there, right? So it's the same, not the same thing, but it's a similar concept. So I wanted to elaborate on this information about OCD and kind of narrow in and focus on basically how to combat the OCD thoughts. And the book says, again, quote, changing your behavior changes your brain. And so they talk about four very powerful steps that I am now going through. So I will be recording episodes about the specific steps so that I can break them down. This is kind of like the little intro, if you will, into the whole thing. But in a nutshell, I wanted to kind of share four different steps that the introduction brought up. So the first thing is to pay less attention to the unpleasant sensations to weaken the brain circuits associated with them. This isn't easy for those sufferers of OCD. We are all on the same train. It is very, very challenging to pay less attention to those unpleasant sensations. But as the book says, OCD is like, you know, a monster that is always hungry, is never completely full, and that feeling of like not enough is always present. And the more that we give in to our compulsions, the more that we pay attention to all of these things, it's literally, it's like the neuroplasticity, the brain chemistry. We are just fueling these thoughts, and it's going to make OCD stronger. So by paying less attention to that, we're actually weakening the brain circuits. I am beyond like shocked, I guess. Like I've always known this truth in my core that we are able to heal ourselves by changing, you know, certain behaviors and things, and to hear it from a doctor. And by the way, this book is literally something that is used as a way to help patients. So this book is legit, guys, just saying. So that is something that, you know, we're all striving together to work towards, is to pay less attention. And see, this is I'm probably like fueling my compulsions right now, because typically I say and repeat myself, and I've been told even in work situations that I ask the same question more than once, or I repeat myself more than once, and three seems to be the number for me. And I think if I were to go back and re-listen to this, I probably said the same thing three times. So I'm going to pay less attention to that and move on to the second bullet, which is accept the quote unquote bad thought as an obstacle to overcome. So that word acceptance is used throughout the book, at least the first chapter. And it's a tough one, right? We as human beings, whether you suffer from OCD or not, have a very hard time accepting things that we don't want to, don't believe is true, you know, don't know how to accept. It's really, really difficult to do that. One thing that I can say, for me personally, again, through the emetophobia recovery and through the scrupulosity recovery, is that the more that I kept telling myself, this is OCD, this is not you, and, you know, especially with the scrupulosity, because that really messed with my head, the more that I would tell myself, okay, well, you know what, if you don't pray this exact prayer that mom taught you or the church tells you to. Like, nothing is going to happen to your family. There is no association between, you know, what you think you need to do to feel less anxious and what you fear is going to happen. And the book gives really great examples of how people have these like fear-based thoughts that if they, let's say, are driving and they go over a speed bump, they think that they just ran over someone and their fear and their anxiety tells them that was you, and their compulsion is to go back and check. And sometimes it would take people hours just to even go from point A to point B because they truly believed that they ran someone over. And so this is a very challenging thought to accept and say, okay, I accept this thought and I accept that it is OCD. It's not me, it is my OCD. The third is to alter your behavioral response and change your brain chemistry. And the fourth is to strengthen your ability to resist the urge, which again, similar to the acceptance, strengthening the ability to resist the urge is not something that is easy. To help give a little example of this, they gave an analogy, and it says this, quote, "Think of the analogy of the insistent car alarm that annoys you while you are trying to read a novel or a magazine. No matter how annoyed you are not going to sit there and say to yourself, I'm going to make that alarm turn off and I'm not even going to try to read this until it does. Rather, you're going to do your best to ignore it, work around it. You're going to put your mind back where you want it and do your reading as well as you can. You'll become so absorbed in what you're doing that you'll hardly notice the alarm. So by focusing your attention on a new task, what would otherwise be extremely annoying and bothersome can be worked around and ignored." So only a change in the brain itself, or at least in brain chemistry, will bring about lasting improvement. And that basically, you know, the more behavior therapy you do and the more that you apply the four-step method, which is listed in this book, the more that you'll be able to recover. And it also says the less medication that you will need. So I hope this was helpful. I'm really, really excited to embark on this OCD discovery journey with you. And this book is incredibly powerful. And again, where I was going about mentioning earlier that there was a part in this book that triggered me on the subway as I was reading it on my way home is that someone had a fear that his nails had razors on them and that he was terrified to even touch his partner because he thought that he was going to hurt her. And even during intimacy, he would stop and ask her, "Are you okay?" Because he truly believed and was so fearful that his nails had this like ability to hurt the people around him. And he believed it so much so, and the anxiety was, you know, so overwhelming that, you know, he was basically trying to figure out his compulsions to, you know, basically help himself in the attempt of trying to feel better. And I don't know what about that totally triggered me, because there's another part of the book that says that they have like a group at their university where OCD sufferers will gather together and basically talk about their OCDs and their symptoms and their obsessions and their compulsions. And at first there was this fear or this uncertainty that, you know, people were going to fuel one another and like have a battle of, you know, who's suffering the most. And then the other concern was, well, what if people start developing new phobias or new fears or new anxieties because of hearing about everyone else's? And it turns out that that didn't happen. And yet, 3 pages later, when I read about this guy, it somehow triggered me. And I don't know why. So if anything, I'm kind of glad that there was some type of new trigger, because now I can, you know, take this trigger and try to have this mindfulness the way that the book is teaching me. Not to just observe my thoughts, but to really ask myself, you know, specific questions and like try to assess them and then decide what to do about them. So, you know, for starters, when you are working on weakening the brain circuits, any future fear or anxiety that could basically rev up the OCD in another topic or category, if you're able to change the brain circuit once and you're weakening those brain circuits, any future subset of OCD, et cetera, are also weakened because you are literally teaching yourself the way to rationalize what's going on and remind yourself that it's the OCD and it's not you. So because of the work that I did on myself in recovery with the emetophobia and the scrupulosity, I feel that even though in that moment I was super triggered, I was able to catch myself and say, okay, Lizzie, hold on a second, girl. Hold on a second. Look at your nails. They're fine, right? Like, you have long nails, but they're not razors. You can't hurt anyone. It's an irrational thought, and you know this. And it like kind of soothed me. But in the moment, and this is also why I wanted to talk about this today, is because this happened like an hour ago and it's fresh. I wanted to talk to you guys, you know, very like raw and genuinely as the trigger was, you know, it's kind of like coming down. So what I can tell you from firsthand experience as of an hour ago is that when I read that, the immediate thought that popped up into my head was, oh my God, what if my nails are razors? What if that could happen to me? And somehow there was this like, you know, my heart started going faster, my palms were starting to sweat, and I started having just like anxiety and fear. And so that, again, right then and there, just reaffirmed to me that stress and anxiety is what fuels these thoughts. And so I had to, again, go through some of these steps and like calm myself down. And I can share that it worked. So here I am an hour later and I'm feeling like relaxed about it, knowing that when I read this book again tomorrow, that thought will not be as strong in my head. So stay tuned for the next episode. Again, I hope that this was helpful. I loved talking about this and just, again, doing like a podcast version of a book club. So as I mentioned at the beginning, the link and all of the things will be in the description. And again, at Found Family Pod on Twitter, if you are interested in joining the book club, we're in Slack. I've created a channel and we're going to be doing these once a week to chat about our thoughts, what's working, what's not working, and just hold each other accountable and just be a support system to one another. And that's what this is all about. We're all in this together. You're not alone. If you're having these thoughts, you're not crazy. I definitely would consult with a therapist and, you know, don't try to self-diagnose, but there definitely are a lot of signs that if you have it, there's ways that you'll know. And there's also a test, I think, in this book too, but you might not know. And some people actually in this book said that, you know, if sometimes people that think that they have it actually don't have it, which I guess makes sense because yeah, when I was really in the weeds of it, I didn't think that I had it. But when I read a book about it, a lot of the things started to click and then I went to my therapist. So I'm stalling. I just really like talking about this and want to share all of this with you guys. So yeah, be on the lookout for the next brain lock segment, and I will talk to you guys soon. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to this week's episode. Be sure to hit that subscribe button and tune in next week for a new topic. To help spread the good vibes, please share this episode with friends and family, or if you share on social, be sure to tag me at Coach Lizzie.